I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
And so they wanted you to really create a monster. So I have this wall in my office upstairs that I painted gray so I don't have to do, you know, like the whole up and down for the self-tape. And they said, show your physicality. So I was like, of course I'm going to do this. But I decided I'm not going to do it on the floor. I'm going to do it on my back wall.
Hello, world, and welcome back to another episode of Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. If this is your first time tuning in, this is the show where I speak to fellow actors about their journey in the industry, and I make them share a bad or funny audition story with me. We always have a good time here. If you're not yet subscribed to the show, make sure to hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening to it right now, and don't forget to leave us some love in the form of rates and reviews. Today is a milestone for us. For me, for the show, for everyone who's listened to it for this long, today is episode 150. If I was on a set with other people right now, I'd be like doing the pew, 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 but I'm not. I am just home in my office, so I'm not going to do that. But I just want to take a moment to say thank you to everyone who has listened to the show for this long. Started out almost 4 years ago, which is crazy to think about. And here we are, still kicking and still having a good time and still laughing and crying together. So thanks for listening. Today on the show, I have Lauren Escandon. She's in the brand new Netflix movie, Shirley, with Regina King. You can see her on The Baxters. She is a very inspiring woman who is certainly forging her own path in this world. And we had a great time together. So here's my conversation with Lauren. And welcome to the show, Lauren.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for having me. So excited.
I'm so excited to have you. You are like a ray of sunshine. You popped on my screen here and I was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be so much fun.
Well, I was kind of freaking out and technology is not my thing. So it was like a really good way to wake up, I guess, like finally.
A good morning jolt.
Exactly.
I love that. Well, I'm very excited to have you on the show. We have a lot to talk about, new movie, shows, all this fun stuff. But the first thing I love to ask my guests is, what made you want to be an actor?
Okay, short story. Let's make it short. I was first a ballerina. And so I went to the National Ballet School in my country, in Colombia, and I was a dancer. And it got to a point that my body just couldn't do it anymore. Like my knees, my ankles, I was massively broken and destroyed. And it was a time to decide, well, I'm going to go to college. And I wanted to be a journalist. That was my initial goal. I wanted to tell stories. I wanted to interview people. But I grew up in very complicated times in my country. And when I asked my parents to go and study journalism, my mom was like, no, I'm not. I'm definitely not paying for you to get killed. That was her answer. Very pragmatic, as my mother was. And so I was like, okay, so I'm missing being on stage too, because I grew up dancing since I was 8. And by then I was just like very used to going to the conservatory, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, well, I need to find a low risk career. And so I told my mom, okay, they just opened the theater program in my college. I'm just going to go audition and see if I can get in. And I did. So that's the way that theater came into my life. So I have always been an artist, but acting wasn't my first choice. I was a dancer first. And then acting came as an aftermath from not being able to study journalism.
I mean, it makes sense that transition, because dancing is all about emoting and feeling emotions and getting the audience to feel how you're feeling on stage. So it's really comes down to the same thing. It's just like you study in different ways and there's different techniques.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely storytelling. It's all connected to storytelling. I think that is mostly my call. It's not just one tool, but it's how many tools can I tap into to tell stories.
100%. I'd love to know your journey from Colombia to America. What was that like for you?
Traumatic. So I was finishing theater school in Colombia, and in Colombia you have to do a thesis. So right before I presented my thesis, I decided I don't want to be in Colombia. I want to leave. I want to explore the world. When I was in college, I was very fortunate to be selected for the company, the theater company that my school had, that it was just a few students that will travel the world with their plays. So that kind of opened a different perspective for me while I was going through theater festivals and stuff like that. And so by the time I wanted to graduate, I was about to graduate it, I really wanted to live somewhere else. And when you're Colombian, getting an American visa is really hard. So I was applying to different visas around the world. And I always said, if I get the American visa, I'm going to America regardless, because it is the hardest to get. So I got my visa and I was like, yes, Broadway, here we go. But I don't sing, not even to save my life. So that was the first obstacle. The second one was that I didn't speak English. So it was like, okay, I'm going to go and do theater in America, but I don't even speak the language, but who cares? I obviously didn't think through the whole thing, but thank God, because otherwise I wouldn't have done it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel that one of the reasons I made it here is because I was never thinking too much ahead. I was always like going with the impulse and just figuring when I was under the circumstances that I was presented with. And I just kept going, just kept moving. So that was, I moved to New York and I was doing a lot of theater in Spanish while I was learning the language. And I was very happy with my theater life, but then it got to a point that we had to move to Denver with my husband. And that was like a whole different adjustment too, because there is not much going on in Denver. But funny enough, when I was in Denver is when I booked my first TV show. So, you know, life is complicated and mysterious.
Yeah, life is weird, man. Things happen out of your control when they want to, and you just got to go with it.
Correct. Yeah. Thank God. Well, yeah, I'm not so much about like, I'm a planner. I'm very much a type A. But at the same time, I'm like very much allowing like impulses to take me places, because otherwise it's just like too much planning and too much in the head, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm very much the same way, where it's like, I would love to be able to plan everything, but when you're an artist, you have to let go. You just have to.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating.
I feel you. Yes, I'm the same way. Like, okay, I'm gonna like go. Yeah, a panic attack right before.
Or you're like, I'll let go tomorrow. I'm not gonna let go today, but I'll let go tomorrow.
Yeah, even with I plan when I'm gonna let go.
Well, I'd love to talk to you about your new film, Shirley, which is on Netflix with Regina King. Tell me what it was like to make this movie and a little bit about your character.
Well, it was very educational, first of all, because I have to say, since I didn't grow up here, I didn't grow up familiar with the history of this country. And so when I had the opportunity to audition for the part, I had to educate myself about who was Shirley Chisholm, because that was a new name for me. And just finding who she was and all like the progress that she brought to women and to women of color in the world of politics was so inspiring. And well, at the same time, I had the opportunity to work with Regina King, who is an icon, and with John Ridley, who is like the most amazing director out there. So it was truly a very special experience. And I play a character called Rose, and Rose is pretty much like a Hispanic workers' leader. So I have a conversation with Shirley about fair wages in one of her campaign stops. So it's almost like leader to leader having this conversation, and it's it was a very special project overall, like being in the presence of all these amazing actors and this amazing director, and telling a story that is so relevant, especially now with women's rights and all the movement that we are having to encounter over and over again, no? The cycle of like women's history, how it seems like we are striving one way and then all of a sudden we're back at the beginning. So it's very inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, like just hearing about your character and knowing all of the workers' rights movements that we've had in the past couple of years as well. I mean, even for us as actors, I was a strike captain at WB for months. Like,
totally.
we just went through this. So it's, I think movies like this are super important to not only like remind people of the past, but show them how the present is emulating the past and how we can get past it and what we can learn from these incredible leaders from our history.
Yeah, correct. And at the same time, it's like, I feel what we were saying, history is so cyclical, no? We're kind of like reinventing, and we're moving two steps forward and then one back, and then we have to figure other ways. With the strike, it was the same way. With the strike, it was complicated for everybody, obviously, but something beautiful that happened during the strike was the Latinas Acting Up group was born during the strike too, which is an organization that is forming a very strong presence in Hollywood. And I'm like very, very glad that I was able to witness that process too. Yeah.
It was very cool. I remember Latinas Acting Up coming to WB and it was always a party.
La chancleta. Yeah, we're all with the flip-flops. It was so much fun. It was the only way to survive the strike because it was so long. Yeah. Like, it felt like demoralizing every time. And we were like, no, we refuse to fall into the game of just feeling sorry for ourselves. We're fighting for something we think is right. And we're going to bring all the energy and the happiness that we can to this like dark moment and try to lift everybody up. So that was kind of the purpose too.
We're going to take a quick commercial break and then we'll be right back.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
And back to the show.
I also want to talk to you about The Baxters, which is a TV series that you're on. You play Pastor Mariana. Tell me about the show. Tell me what it's like playing a pastor, because I've never done that, and I want to know what that experience is.
It's a very interesting experience, because it kind of like, well, it kind of depends how you prepare, right? But the way that I prepare kind of forced me so much to ask all the hard questions about my own beliefs and my own faith. Mm. So it was a very personal and intimate process to prepare for Pastor Mariana. And I love her so much because she is just such a positive light. She's positive, but she understands that humans have to be humans and they have flaws, and the flaws is where grow lives, right? Where we expand. So I love that she understands all of that while she's guiding this community through their faith. The Baxters is a show that is coming on Prime. Prime Video is premiering like over 240 countries and territories. So wow. It's kind of like interesting to see that massive reach. And it's a family drama based on Karen Kingsbury's books. And it's very interesting. It follows Elizabeth and John Baxter, who are the parents, Roma Downey and Ted McKinley. And there are five adult kids. And it's just a family going through life and, you know, dealing with all the things that adulthood and young adulthood brings to you. And it's just a very delicate show. And I feel like because it's a very universal family in the sense of the specificity of the situations they're going through, I feel like people are definitely going to identify with this family deeply. Yeah. And I hope they identify with me, even though I'm playing a pastor, and not everybody can be a pastor.
I hope so too. I'm so excited to watch it. I love a good family like drama. I think that we need more of them.
Yes.
Honestly, like Gilmore Girls is still one of my favorite shows.
Yeah. And I feel like it's beautiful. Like, obviously, there are so many shows out there that tap into very sophisticated themes and why not. And those are super excited too. But I feel there is a value on just portraying families going through life, because I feel that it creates this sense of we're less lonely when we can see people going through the things that we're going through, right? And the drama that we're going through. And it's like even the most simple and happy family has a lot going on. So it's kind of interesting just to dive into that intimacy too.
100%. Before we get to like audition stories and all that fun stuff, I want to give you some time to talk about directing and writing, because you've been creating your own content and really like making things that matter. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your experience becoming an indie filmmaker and like also balancing, you know, doing the mainstream acting stuff.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the whole directing and stepping into like the behind the cameras and writing came mostly as a need to explore stories that were more endearing to me. You know, like as actors, we really do not have that much control over the stories that we need to tell, that we are presented to tell. And because I'm a woman of color and because I have an accent and I'm an immigrant, most of the stories that come my way come tainted with something that is somehow stereotypical, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I love the backstories, because it's nothing like that. That's why I love, and I'm kind of very aware of the parts that I play precisely because of it. I don't, I know that I'm that, but I know that I'm much more than that. So I don't want all my characters to be just that perspective of who I am. So I decided, well, I'm going to start like writing characters that I would like to play, even though I have never written anything that I have played. But things that I would think that are interesting for someone like me, and give that opportunity to other actors. And that's how I started like the whole writing and directing. I didn't go to directing school, so I have been learning with each project. I have been very mindful of surrounding myself with people that knows what they're doing, so I can actually learn from them. It's almost like making my own school out of it. And my latest project directing was a really interesting project that we did in a cohort of 14 female filmmakers. And it was a reactionary tale to Roe v. Wade, to the overturn of Roe v. Wade. So it's a feature film made as an anthology style. So each director wrote and directed their own fragment, but we put it together as a feature. And it's actually available in all the platforms, VODs and whatever. It's called Give Me an A. And that was a very interesting project, because that was very guerrilla style. We made it with no money. I mean, a bunch of women talking about abortion, no one is going to give us money.
Well, maybe Planned Parenthood, but that's about it.
They didn't even have any money because they were struggling too.
Yeah. Right?
So it was like, it was a lot of people that came support us. It was a lot of actors, amazing actors like Gina Torres, like Alyssa Milano, like Jason George, like Sean Gunn. They all came to support us, to help us make the film, to act in our films. Everybody worked pro bono. So it was a very interesting experience for like indie filmmaking, another level of it. And it was very enriching story and experience overall, obviously. We did it in like a record time. From the moment that Roe v. Wade got overturned was like June 28th. And by September 9th, we had the film done. It was like,
wow.
It was a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of tears.
I mean, I remember like reading about this in the trades and seeing what was happening, Give Me an A. And I was like, this is like such a cool way of like striking back, but like not really strike. I mean, it was striking back, but it was like done in such a beautiful and respectful way of saying like, hey, this is how we feel. And what the heck have you done? Yeah. And I just like
this, all the perspectives are very particular, very precise and very different. So yeah.
But I wanted to ask, like, how did like the core filmmakers come together to say like, this is what we need to do now, and we need to do it right now.
And that's a story. So we have a friend of mine, the executive producer, Tasha Halevi. It was the 4th of July, so I was out of town in the mountains just relaxing after I had cried much about the Roe v. Wade. And all of a sudden, she sent me a message on Instagram, and she's like, hey, Lauren, do you have a time for a meeting on Zoom? And I'm like, yes, when? And she's like, in like 30 minutes. And I'm like, okay. So I jump into this Zoom, and it's like 10 women that I have never seen before, with the exception of Natasha and Monica. And we were all like, how are we feeling about this situation? And we all start just like pouring our hearts out about how we felt, how it affect us and whatever. And by the end of that meeting, we were like, Natasha was like, well, we are all filmmakers. We're all storytellers. Let's make something. But let's don't think about it, because if we think about it, it's not going to happen. And we're going to do it ourselves, because no one is going to come and help us. And we're going to shoot the first week of August. I'm talking, it's July 4th. And we have nothing but the idea that we're going to react to this situation. And we are like, in a week, we're pitching stories. And 2 weeks later, we're writing. And 3 weeks later, I'm meeting with Gina Torres to convince her to play my part in my film. And she's saying yes. And then I have 8 days to put together my entire cast and crew around Gina. And I have 1 day and a half to shoot. And that was the story for everybody.
Oh, my Lord.
I love your face. Did I hear that?
It's just, I mean, as an indie filmmaker myself, my brain is melting. That's wild. But, you know, it's so smart the way that it was done, because Natasha's right. Like, the second you start thinking about it, it's not going to happen, right? Like, the more thought you put into it, the more meetings you have, the more this, like, it becomes this overcomplicated thing. And obviously, you know, we all want to be able to pay people because this is our living and this is what we do. Yeah. But sometimes there's projects like this where, like, this is more important to just do and get it out, instead of like trying to figure out how to raise money. Like, do you want to go to Seed and Spark or Kickstarter? No, let's just make the dang thing.
Yeah, correct. And I feel like, because it was so reactionary, you can really feel it in the final product. Like, we were very raw about it. And it might rub some people the wrong way. And you know what? Everybody's entitled to their feelings and their perspective of this issue. But I think that one thing that nobody can take away from that project is that it's as honest as it could possibly be.
And it's made by women, so.
It is made by small women.
So we love that. Well, everybody should go watch Give Me an A, because it's awesome and so cool to see so many people come together in such a beautiful way. We are at the part of the show where I ask my guests to share audition stories. That can be something funny, can be something tragic. Is there a story that you would like to share with the listeners?
Oh, God. So audition is such a process, right? Because it's almost like this idea that you get so attached to characters in just one read or two or three, and then they just never become part of your life or your story, and is really heartbreaking. I'm gonna share one that is really funny. So I auditioned, I don't know if it's funny, it's kind of tragic.
But the best comedies are tragedies, right?
So this was it was an audition that I did for a horror film. I never auditioned for horror films. To be full disclosure, I don't watch horror films because I dream every night, so I get nightmares out of it. But when that part came along, I was like, oh, this is cool, because it's like the mom, and something happens, and then she becomes a monster. So I get to be both, and this is really cool. And they wanted someone that has a lot of experience with physicality. And so they wanted you to really create a monster. So I have this wall in my office upstairs that I painted gray, so I don't have to do, you know, like the whole up and down for the self-tape. And they said, show your physicality. So I was like, of course I'm going to do this. But I decided I'm not going to do it on the floor. I'm going to do it on my back wall. So I have like this chair, and I created a thing where I do my legs around, and I'm like standing in my head and like all these crazy things. And I'm creating this really deep voice. And like the whole thing, I'm doing like the whole thing, right? And it's like three scenes, and one is like from the mom to the monster. So I edit it in a way that I go from one makeup to the other. I invested so much into the audition. It was so much fun. 2 weeks later, call back is the day that we go on strike. So they cancel as I'm going to my Zoom. And I'm like, damn. Okay, it's fine. 2 weeks later, oh, we got an extension contract. It's okay. We're going to do the callback. Great. I go the wall again, the whole thing. Third, producer's callback. Yes, this is getting closer. This is good. It's still the wall. The wall now has like strikes all over that I cannot even clean, like whatever. That wall is absolutely destroyed. I get a one-on-one with the director. I'm like, damn, of course this is happening. I'm a monster now. I get a chemistry read with the lead. Oh, and she is adorable. So cool. I love that chemistry read thinking, damn, that felt really good. Definitely, that's a possibility. And I am in the middle of my vacation in Venice, in Italy, my last day, when we get the information that I didn't get it. And I start crying in the middle of the Italian street, and everybody's looking at me and my husband, and they're looking at my husband like he did something to me. And I'm like, no, I cannot even explain. I spent 3 months in this audition and I didn't get it. And I'm like crying by the channels of Venice. And it's like so tragic and stupid because it's like, it's not like the first time someone says no, but someone told me, my friend is like, well, at least you got to cry for it in Venice. And I'm like, you know what? You're right.
That's true. That is true. That is the one up there.
That is like the only upside of that, because, you know, I got so attached to that character, is the truth. I created so much out of it and I was having so much fun with it. It was really sad not to get it. But then I saw the picture of the person that got it, and it makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah. That's life, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, that's just what happens with auditioning. It's, you know, you can have the best audition, you can have like the best chemistry read, and then you look at who actually books it and you're like, ah, we look different. Got it. I understand now.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, it was the person that got it, I'm quite sure is going to do an amazing work too. It's just what it is. And yeah. I had to go and paint my wall again because it was too damaged to keep self-taping on it.
That's iconic behavior right there. I love it.
I was like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get this part. And I'll probably never watch the movie because I'll have nightmares.
Now I'm very excited. I love horror films, so I'm going to have to watch this. I'm going to have to pry you for the name after we're done.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
We're done recording. Well, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show. How can people follow you on social media to keep up with all of the wonderful things that you're doing?
Oh, well, it's just my name, Loren Escandón, and just do the ad before everything and you will find me. That's pretty much it. So Instagram, and I don't do that much of the X, Twitter, or whatever they call it nowadays, but Instagram for sure.
Me neither. The second Elon bought it, I was like, what is happening? There's a different name. Yeah, they took away my check mark. See you later.
Yes. But I can change in my app and I'm like, did I download this?
Yeah. Like, what is this? Yeah. Is there any other projects or anything else that you have going on that you want to plug before we go?
I have one, but I cannot talk too much about it. So you'll have to invite me again.
Yeah. We'll share it when you can talk about it.
Yes, I will.
Well, it was so lovely having you on. Thank you so much for stopping by, and congratulations on all the fun things that you have happening right now.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun, and I wish you all the best. I hope everything goes your way always.
Thanks again to Loren for coming on the show and hanging out with me. Make sure to catch Shirley on Netflix now and The Baxters, which literally came out March 28th on Amazon Prime. Check her out in those. Make sure to follow her on Instagram to keep up with all of her wonderful and wonderful new things, and follow the show as well. And as always, thanks for coming in.
Hey, Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.